time for our weekly catch-up with ACT Party Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden.
So this week we discussed vaccines and the vaccine rollout. As you may have heard of yesterday, the government has purchased enough vaccines for everyone in New Zealand, as well as just a little bit of surplus. They're all going to be coming from Pfizer, and so far there hasn't been a definite rollout plan for the whole of the country, but there is expectations that that is going to come out at some point today. I still wanted to discuss this whole topic with Brooke and understand where ACT stands on vaccines. So here's that chat. So I wanted to start off this week by talking about vaccines. So the Greens have joined ACT and National in questioning the rollout of vaccines in New Zealand. And so far, border workers are being vaccinated with the rest of New Zealand to be vaccinated starting from about mid this year. Why should this be of concern to New Zealand when it's relatively COVID-free and we're going to all be getting vaccines at some point or another?
The vaccine rollout should be a concern to every New Zealander, mainly because we don't actually know what's happening and why. The government comes out and says, well, we're at the front of the queue for vaccinations worldwide and we'll get a great deal. But in fact, even Zimbabwe, one of the poorest countries of the world, has vaccinated more people than us. They've gotten faster into vaccinating and getting a healthier population than we have. But the problem is that, you know, only 3/4 of our border workforce has yet been vaccinated. Britain, on the other hand, about 1 in 3 adults already has it, and 1 million people have already started to get that second vaccination. Of course, the government, Chris Hipkins, have said, well, this is because, you know, we've had lockdowns and so we're safer than a lot of the other countries in the world, so we don't need our vaccinations. But we have no ability to know if that is in fact true. We don't have any information about the process that went behind when we got our contracts versus the other countries who haven't been quite so secretive about when we're getting it and why. And so I think there are a lot of questions that we do have to ask this government, but there's just not enough information coming back to us about why we're not getting our vaccinations as fast as other countries around the world.
Is it really that fair to be comparing New Zealand to the UK or Zimbabwe when relatively we're far safer in our position compared to the UK, which has had millions of cases, and Zimbabwe's far more prone when it comes to how many resources they have to deal with COVID?
Yeah, it is a fair comparison, because you've just got to think, what does this mean for the average person? You know, we can't continuously say we are safer as a country, as an economy, because this has ongoing effects for people's lives. You know, I talk to school kids who are anxious that they're missing out on those first days of school, feeling like this has all happened last year. Same thing for university students. Same thing for cafe owners who are constantly worried that they're going to have another lockdown every time we have one single COVID outbreak. You know, people from Northland who are just sick of being told that they're getting cut off from the rest of the country. They can't get their goods in for weeks at a time because there's such supply chain problems. So this is going to be an ongoing problem for our country if we can't get the processes in place to make sure that we can get out the other side and be a fully vaccinated population.
So on like a wider diplomatic view, you're saying that those in New Zealand who are safe and don't have a risk of contracting COVID and dying from COVID should be valued more than those overseas who are more likely to potentially come in contact with COVID?
No, that's not what I'm saying, because that's what the government is claiming. They're saying, look, we're not getting our vaccines because other people around the world need it before we do. We can't actually quantify or look at whether that is a valid claim, because we don't have any information that the government has from those pharmaceutical agencies, from the drug companies, to know that that's actually the reason why those other countries are beginning it first. It's very possible also that it's because the government never actually went and got good contracts with those companies. So it's fair for the government to go out and say, yes, there are other people who need it more. And in some cases, you could say, yes, they do need it more. But has the government actually done a good job in procuring it for us? And without that information, we're just going off their word. And at this time, I don't think that that's right and that's acceptable.
Looking at the information the government has given us, we know that New Zealand's going to be receiving the Pfizer vaccine, and they've decided to go with just the one type of vaccine to condense the logistics and make it easier to distribute. Does this approach give any excuse as to why we haven't seen a rollout plan so far?
No, I mean, one of the best ways of making sure that we have a plan and that we can stick to it is making sure it is transparent as possible. The government started to get the vaccine into the country before it even had issued guidelines or advice about who was supposed to be getting it first. So it doesn't appear that there's been a lot of thought going into, okay, well, we've got millions of these vaccines potentially coming through the border in the next couple of months. How are we actually going to get this out to the people of New Zealand? Currently, it just has a very broad stroke saying, well, it'll be border workers first, then we'll have healthcare workers and our essential workers. But there's not an actual timeline that they've set for themselves that we as opposition can hold them to. It's more of a feel-good. Hey, we've got something that'll go out at some point. But there's no real, how is this going to get to GP clinics, the hospitals? What is expected of people? Because there's something interesting that I heard the other day, which is you can't get your influenza vaccine until you've had a two-week break before this vaccine, or depending on which one you get first, you can't have it within 2 weeks. Has there actually been a coordinated rollout that's taken into account people needing to have their influenza vaccines? And what is that information between making sure people aren't getting them too soon and too together? Because you've got two independent vaccination rollouts happening at the same time. These are really important questions that we need to ask from the government, but I don't think that we're going to get any information back.
So, still talking about vaccines, where does ACT stand when it comes to the free liberty of being able to turn down a vaccine compared to building herd immunity throughout New Zealand?
Oh, well, ACT always believes in freedom of choice. So we would not force a vaccination on any person who didn't wish to have one. But it is essentially a public health problem. So while you have your right to say no, there should also be the ability for businesses and buildings to say, sorry, you can't actually come into our facility until you've had your vaccination, because this is a health and safety issue. If you think, for example, of a school, they have the responsibility to make sure that every child that they're looking after is safe. And so they actually have a liability, a government law that's telling them that they're responsible for people within their facilities. They should be able to, if that's what they wanted, say, yes, we'll provide you the care and the education you need, but before you come into our facilities, you have to have that vaccine to make sure that we can keep our people safe.
So that was ACT Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden talking about the vaccine rollout and the need for vaccines. We're just going to have a little break before we go into the second half of the interview, where we're going to be talking about climate change. I just want to sort of talk about one of the texts, which was about moist and damp and its use. You wouldn't describe a cake as damp or your socks as moist, and that's exactly the point I was making with my flatmate. Thank you for reiterating that. For now, though, if you're wanting to get in contact with us about any of the pieces, text us on 5395 or Waimairane. Give us a call in studio on 309-3879. For now, though, here are a few ads before we get back to Brooke Van Velden.
Zero emissions, no parking hassles, no traffic. Make your commute fun.
Get on a scooter at Freed, West Haven Drive, your micro-mobility e-scooter specialist.
Freed Electric Scooters is the place to go for all your e-scootering needs. Their full-service workshop covers all brands of e-scooters. Plus, they're the exclusive agent for top-of-the-line zero electric scooters.
Freed electric scooters. Fun, safe and easy to ride. Find out more at freedpev.co.nz.
Yeah. Oh, man, this is so crazy.
You guys got anything to eat?
Holy crap! The lucky taco truck just crashed through the flipping wall. Okay. There goes Bond.
Anyone for tacos?
Couldn't we just order online?
I mean, yeah, you could. But the atmosphere, man.
The Lucky Taco Fiesta Kit. Everything you need to make authentic, delicious tacos at your place. Get them from Faro Fresh or order online at theluckytaco.co.nz for free delivery anywhere Auckland-wide. The Lucky Taco, bringing Mexican street food to your place since way back.
Wow, music's everywhere. It's like a cloud of art. Here at 95BFM, we've sucked up some of the best contemporary bangers, bottled them and chucked them into a special Spotify playlist just for you.
March features June Jones, NT Honey, Sports, Femi Kuti and more.
Follow 95BFM on Spotify for our monthly Spotify playlist and stay au fait.
I don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. It is just a little bit past, quarter past 12. You're listening to The Wire with James and Anika, and we're just going to have the second part of our weekly catch-up with ACT Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden. And in this half, we're going to be talking about climate change, specifically in relation to a report that was put out earlier this week, which was talking about gas exploration and how it has been banned. Any future gas or exploration has been banned in New Zealand. And one of the alternatives was sourcing from Australia. And I talked to her about that and ACT's position on it.
So moving on to our next topic for today, I wanted to talk about gas exploration. So in New Zealand, where there's going to be no more gas exploration, which ACT disagrees with, and there's recently been a report which outlined importing gas from Australia as a potential, but doesn't exactly propose it. Now, your climate change spokesperson, Simon Court, has spoken on the matter talking about the economy. Why isn't ACT's focus on moving away from gas, and so importation then becomes unnecessary?
Well, the reality really is that we need energy. You know, over 400,000 people get their energy from natural gas. And it was at the beginning of the last term, not this term, so 3 years ago, the Labor Party and Winston Peters said, we're going to stop exploration of new natural gas. The issue there, and it was raised at the time, is that we do actually have a lot of people using natural gas. So to stop it being used in the country means we are going to have to find another energy source. So this report came out and said, well, potentially one thing that we could do is start importing it from Australia. And this is becoming a really dangerous way of looking at creating laws, because it happened with the oil and gas ban. So you're essentially saying if we stop using these energy sources, we've still got populations, people trying to, you know, light their fires, cook for their families. How are they actually going to get the hot water that they need at night to shower without an energy source? And so you can't make these things happen overnight. And we've actually seen that coal importation from Indonesia has increased over these last 3 years. And so if you're actually trying to create laws that are good for the environment, you have to acknowledge that by importing energy sources from countries that don't have the emissions standards that we do, we're actually making it worse for the global environment. But while we're doing that, we're also losing jobs to New Zealanders here.
So with climate change, we've been warned that we have to take hard steps to make change, and ACT says it should be left to the market. However, we know large corporations know how to mitigate climate change and have the funding to do so, particularly large oil companies who are seen as large contributors. Why is ACT taking the stance which puts this problem in the hands of the market, who have previously not taken any substantial action while governments are trying to?
I think there's a real difference here about what people can do in their lives and what businesses can do and what the government is seeking to do. Often the laws that are made, especially around climate change and emissions, they have good intentions. And I can't argue with the intentions. I always want our environmental standards to be higher. I want to see a flourishing New Zealand that's clean and green. But we can't judge our laws based on the intent that was set out. We have to judge them on the results, the things that will be the consequence because the law is passed. And if a law sounds good, it doesn't actually mean that it's going to have the effect that we all hope it will. And the problem with looking at these bans on oil, gas, importations, you end up with global standards that are actually worse for the environment than if we let companies with their social responsibility create the change for themselves. And I think we do need to work under the ETS, the Emission Trading Scheme, because we do have to play our part in climate change. But if we hold ourselves as a country at too high a standard, all that happens is companies that actively work in New Zealand and provide jobs to our people will go offshore to countries where they don't have those environmental standards and will still pollute. So we do need to look at how do we have environmental standards in New Zealand, play our part in the world for global emissions and climate change, but not at the detriment of New Zealanders losing their jobs and actually companies making it worse off by going to countries where they can get away with it.
So what does ACT propose so that we can be moving forward with better policy that does mean that we are moving in a positive direction where people aren't losing their jobs? Because a lot of people would argue that corporate responsibility is just not enough to mitigate climate change.
Well, I think we still need to stick with the emissions trading scheme, but make that more robust. I don't think the idea of banning things and making laws change overnight is a good way of I guess, any form of government law, but especially in the form of climate change, because it does send a signal to companies that the government will change things and put new regulations on you and make you less likely to potentially want to invest in new technology because you don't actually know if the laws are going to change in a few years. So giving companies the certainty of knowing that the environment that they work in, which is New Zealand, is going to be stable and that changes will be made over a longer period of time so they can actually set their own standards and know that they're not going to be breaking those within a few years. I think that's the signal that we need to give to the market, not being heavy-handed and acting as though people are doing the wrong thing, when in fact a lot of people do want to do the right thing and a lot of businesses do feel that they want to contribute and make New Zealand a clean and green place.
That was Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party.